This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2017, held at Faith Builders on August 1 through 4.
Well, good morning. Welcome.
Where there is no vision, the people perish. If we didn't have people, we wouldn't have schools either. And wherever we have people, we need leaders. So, I think we already went over the introductions. I got to meet all of you, and we're all pretty much in the same boat, teaching principals. I didn't introduce myself. I'm a teaching principal as well at our church school in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, Sunlight River Brethren School. I took over there from my father after I graduated from TAP here. So this will be my 10th year as principal, and my father is Jonas Stouter. Matt, there's a handout right here.
Welcome.
And you're a teaching principal as well.
Yep.
So we're all in the same boat here, okay? We have leadership as well as teaching in our schools. So, yeah, that's pretty much about myself. I teach in grades 7 to 12, mostly grades 7 and 8, and a couple high school classes. And so I'm pretty much teaching full-time and administrator. So, where there is no vision, the people perish. We think of ourselves, or maybe you don't, but you should, think of yourselves as the visionaries of your school, the architects. And I have a phrase for you. Principals are architects of the future. Have you ever wished you could time travel? Well, you are. You're touching the future church. And teachers are architects of the future as well, but principals even more so, as they cast a vision for the school and the future church. You're shaping the future church, not single-handedly, but perhaps more single-handedly than any other single position in your community. If the principal doesn't have the ideas for child training, for what to do, can't handle conflict, doesn't know what the church should look like in 50 years, doesn't know what the current issues are or have ideas to handle them, and doesn't know Jesus, who's supposed to know and do these things? Ah, yes, the church leaders. It's always their problem, isn't it? So some of you might be church leaders as well. That's not uncommon. Anyone here a church leader as well? No? Okay. They all had to resign and move on. They're too busy. We know how busy we are, and then add church leadership onto that too. But consider the hours of influence a teacher or principal has over the young compared to one minister speaking maybe 1 hour a week. It's hours of difference. In fact, there's one minister in our church who has repeatedly told me and even said over the pulpit that I have the most influential position in our church when it comes to impacting the youth and therefore the future of the church. That's humbling and scary. And if you weren't ready to quit because of all those other low pay, high stress reasons, maybe now you are. And maybe some principals should quit. Here's a story. There was once a mean private school principal who was concerned about enrollment. So he told his secretary, "Get 30 new students enrolled by the end of the week or you're fired." At the end of the week, she had 30 new students enrolled. The principal asked, "How did you do it?" She said, "I just started a rumor you were leaving." So, he led by example, okay? His meanness was reciprocated by the secretary. His character stood out. And that reminds me of James 3:1, commonly translated teachers. "My brethren, be not many masters or teachers, knowing that we shall receive the greater condemnation." So, principles are influential. For good or evil, there's no way around it. So now that you're scared straight, I want to bless you as you labor in this high calling. So how about a good example? Nadia Lopez was ready to quit. She couldn't fall asleep without a pill or function without coffee. Stress triggered an autoimmune abdominal disease that felt like her insides were burning. 4 years earlier, Lopez had founded Mont Hall Bridges Academy, a middle school in Brownsville, which was in Brooklyn, New York, for kids in a dirt-poor, violence-plagued neighborhood. But the love and attention she showered on the city's most challenging students didn't matter. She felt because the numbers on their scores still came in well below average. I was tired. I was angry. I had my laptop ready to write my letter of resignation, Lopez said. Then a miracle happened. On January 9th, 2015, eighth grader Vidal Chastanet popped up on the Humans of New York blog. Asked who influenced him most in life, the youth replied, "My principal, Mrs. Lopez. When we get in trouble, she doesn't suspend us," he said. "She calls us to her office and explains to us how society was built down around us. She tells us that each time somebody fails out of school, a new jail cell gets built. And one time she made every student stand up one at a time, and she told each one of us that we matter." The Facebook post went viral. A crowdfunding campaign to send Mott Hall students on a visit to Harvard University, which Lopez believed would inspire them, raised $1.4 million. The White House invited Lopez and Vidal to meet President Obama. The guy who ran the blog asked her, "What do you need?" Because he knew he had done some fundraising for other people, and he knew he could probably get it. She said, "I'd like to take kids to Harvard and show them anybody can go to Harvard, because these are all children of color who grow up on the streets in gangs, and they think of Harvard as this white place where they could never go." And so to take all of her students, they chartered five buses. She figured it would cost around $90,000, so they decided to raise $100,000. So he put the post up in the morning, and in 45 minutes, they had $100,000 raised to send these kids to Harvard, which happened later then. So I know your situation is probably different, but the principle of the principle isn't. It's all about people. And effective business leaders know this as well. When it comes to business success, it is all about people, 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 a quote by Richard Branson. In fact, Toyota's business philosophy is built around respect for people and continuous improvement, two guiding principles any principal would do well to consider. Respect for people and continuous improvement. And it seems to me like Toyota and Honda, these Eastern manufacturers, have focused on the customer and what does the customer need. One fella told me that Honda came over, sent a representative over to the United States to see what do Americans need. And just one little example is they discovered Americans love cup holders. And I can attest this is true. One of the cars I drove a couple years ago, zero cup holders in it, zero. It was an older car from the 90s. And now we have a Honda minivan. Cup holders on the door, in the center here. In the driver's seat, I have about six different options of where I could put my cup. So Honda took that seriously. What do Americans need? What do Americans like? What does the customer want? And it's just one small example. So they're thinking, they're thinking about the people. What do the people want? And they also think about their employees, and they teach their employees, you're not just pushing tiddlywinks out the door. Every time you put a piece on the assembly line, you're putting this on for the customer. And they teach employee atmosphere and cooperation. You know, we're in this together. We're making something the customer is going to like and enjoy. Whereas the Westerners tend to emphasize product and how fast can we get them out the door and who's taking the market by storm. So this brings us back to our vision verse. Where there is no vision, the people perish. And you are the person. You are the flesh to the vision in your school. Or at least you'd better be. Or maybe you are, whether you'd like it or not, because maybe even if you think you don't have much vision, you're casting lack of vision. Just because of the position you hold, the attitude you have, the things you do, the approach you take will be watched, and that will be casting the vision for your school. So when you consider the web of relationships you have as a principal and that you must maintain, it might look something like this. And this is part of what's so overwhelming, right? The principal, that's you in the middle. You have to relate to the board and keep up those relationships.
You have to relate to the parents, lead the faculty, disciple the students, relate to the law. Pennsylvania just updated immunization requirements this year, and I've spent time meeting with the school nurse and telling these parents, you know, we're going to... And we heard about children and youth services in the last session. Who's responsible for if Melvin says, hey, you should have a relationship? Who's responsible? Hopefully people in your church can help you with that. Vendors, you know, you're ordering supplies. I don't know what your rule is there, but you keep up all these relationships and order everything, CLE. And the church, your church leaders and church community. And this is by no means comprehensive. We could probably add more things to the web. So what would happen if you lost all the people? Take all the outer circles away. There would be no school. So the school is not the building, not the books, not the ideas. It's the people. It's not the programs. It's about people. Usually at the end of the school year, I'm ready for a break. And then I work there in the summer by myself, sometimes in the empty building. And that's refreshing, you know, not to actually be able to get, if I plan to do this, I can accomplish this task because there's nobody to interrupt me because his principals are always getting interrupted. But then by the end of the summer, I get tired of the empty block walls and, you know, what am I doing here in this empty room? I'm ready for the people to come back. And that re-energizes me when the people come back in August and we're looking to start again. 1 Peter 2:5. You yourselves, like living stones, are being built up as a spiritual house. Now, I'm not a mason, but you know, looks pretty challenging to me to stack stones or stack all these blocks here and get them straight. Have you ever tried to stack living stones that are yelling and screaming at you? No, I don't want to be in the wall. I don't want to help hold up the other blocks and stones. So people are hard work, and God knows this. In fact, one of my first employers told me, supervision is half the work. So here's a little comic, you might call it, about supervision. It's actually from 1928. And so it might have some outdated things on it, but I just found this on Google to illustrate all the different demands you have on you. Okay, so down here we have scholarship, intellect, character, health. Out here, we're doing nature study. You got to worry about the school furniture. The three R's up there, are we getting them? And what about art? What about hygiene? Should we be teaching more there? So all these different things that you're worried about, and you're responsible for them. Supervisor knows all. So two definitions. You look over things, and you oversee or look ahead and see what you're going to need. My grandpa was asked how he could stack hay bales so fast and efficiently. He said, when I'm stacking a bale, I'm looking already where to stack the next one. So when I go back, get the next bale, I already know where I'm going with that one. And while I'm putting that one in, I'm looking where to put the next one. So that's your job as a leader, to be looking ahead, see what's going to be needed. But not every worker does look ahead. The bottom line is every organization or group of people needs someone in charge with supervision. On a fire scene, there has to be someone to take charge or it's chaos, believe me. There has to be clear rules and expectations. And it doesn't matter so much which firefighters are assigned to raise the ladder or drag the hose, since theoretically all are trained to do it equally. It matters that someone has given the direction to make sure it gets done without duplication in the shortest time possible, and to make sure they're not spraying water at each other and pushing the fire towards each other. Somebody has to call the shots. I caught chickens when I was a teenager, broilers off the floor for live market in New York City, and I prided myself on catching them as fast as I could, you know, sometimes by sixes, sometimes by eights. And is it faster to get them like this, or is it faster to catch some and then put some over and catch some more and then put some back? And I, you know, did both. And anyway, one time my boss, or the guy that hired me, wasn't there. So he put me in charge of supervising inside the house. And he said, it's okay if you don't get any chickens caught. It's your job to see that they don't pile up and die. Supervision is half the work. So if chickens pile up, they can die really fast before you can. We're talking about a couple hundred birds. You scare them. and they get in the corner here and you have chickens 3 feet high, you're not going to physically pull them out by the time some on the bottom die. And so we're talking about hundreds of dollars or thousands of dollars. I don't know. I didn't handle the money. So if we can afford to put one man in charge of a small crew of chicken catchers, can we not afford to put someone in charge of our student catching? So this means, in addition to the daily grind of phone calls, questions, visits, and fires that you have to put out, we must find time to sit down and look ahead, or sideways. People don't understand that good principals aren't just planning this summer for the coming year. They're thinking 10 years out, a generation out, or planning for eternity, because principals are architects of the future. So this is an important work. How can we be effective? Effective principals, well, I'll start with this. Knowing supervision is important. Most educators would enroll their child in a school that just hired a great principal but has a weak staff, rather than a school with a strong staff that just hired a weak principal. Now, that could be debatable, but according to one person's opinion, that's the way it would be. A principal has the strength to make or break the staff. Maybe some of his experienced staff will leave in a couple years because they get tired of working for that principal. So what makes a principal effective? Effective principals view themselves as responsible for all aspects of their school. And this isn't some magic formula only relating to principals. I mean, this is true of probably any business leader or any father. Effective principals view themselves as responsible. And that doesn't mean they don't involve others in decision-making, or they do everything themselves, that they don't delegate, but they believe it's their responsibility to make their school the best it can be. When faced with budget cuts or school board decisions they don't like, effective principals see themselves as the ultimate problem solvers. The buck stops here. We're going to figure it out. Less effective principals blame outside factors. It's always the parents, the teachers, the students, the government's fault. And if we got rid of this or changed that, then I would have a good school. So, who is responsible for the climate in your school? Effective principals say, I am. Less effective principals respond, oh, everybody is. Or, oh, the teachers are, etc. Ineffective principals complain. Effective principals listen, seek advice to find solutions, even if they don't know the solutions. They take the responsibility and go out and find them. So, in review, the three main principles for principals are, it's all about people, supervision is half the work, and take responsibility. Any questions or comments so far before we move on to the three remaining categories? Okay, next I'd like to focus on three relationships on the teacher's web for the rest of our time: parents, faculty, and students. And as you can see on your handout, for each one, for each category, I've chosen an aspect of that relationship that I think the principal is key for the principal to lead out in: communicating with parents, developing your faculty, and discipling your students. And I do want to say before we go on, I don't come with all the answers or 40 years of experience. I'm just starting my 10th year as principal, as I said. I come as one in the trenches, and I hope to inspire you and be inspired as well as we share together in the same boat. So hopefully we'll have some time for some input from you or questions or discussion as we go through these categories. So first of all, in communicating with parents, in this relationship with parents, communication is key. Melvin talked about that a little bit this morning. I have a question for you. We work for parents. True or false? We work for the parents. Yes? Okay. Anybody want to challenge that or broaden that? And who else would we be working for?
Oh, really?
Okay, the student as well, ultimately.
It may depend on the structure. Are you a church school or a patron school?
Right. So if you're a church school?
You may primarily look under the leadership of the church.
Right. Mm-hmm. So that's really how it would be in my school as far as the leadership structure. You know, if you were going to sketch out what Melvin was talking about the other day, it'd be me to the school board and our school board to our church leadership, be how ours is structured. So, yes, we're working for the parents. Although we're not just subcontractors, like the parents are too lazy to homeschool, so they hired us to do it instead, and they're the final authority. And I think the church should be involved. So I want to look at parents as partners, okay? We're not just working for them. Like, everything they say, we shall do, okay? There's time to push back and say, in our community, you know, thus and so. And there's a time for us to have a vision beyond what the parents have, and yet we are their partners, and so we are called to share their vision and work together as a church to decide how to run the school. So definitely we're a team. We are working for the parents, and I like that thought. We're ultimately, this is about the students in the future kingdom, and big picture, it's about the church or the kingdom of God. So some categories here, communicating with parents, how do you do that? How should we do that? Some of us have more experience and some of us are just starting, so maybe we can share some ideas. So first of all, newsletters. We have a monthly newsletter called The Reflections. Basically, it starts out with dates and upcoming events, so it's a place to put in, you know, the parent-teacher meetings coming up. And this is the Bible memory that your students should be working on, because we expect the parents to help them with that at home. So these are current Bible memory passages. They're always listed on there. And if I have time, sometimes I put, since it's called the Reflections, I have the principal reflections in as well. And I'll write up a little blurb about anything that comes to mind, related to education, something that I've been studying, or just... the principal blurb, something to say. And then we often end with student reflections, where I try to gather some composition examples, or it could even be drawings. In today's age, I can scan some drawings and put them on. So student writings or drawings that get attached to the back of the reflections, and that gets sent home every month. So that's the newsletter we do. Some of you might do weekly things, or more or less, or nothing. What comments or questions do you have? Let's just start with, how many do some type of newsletter? Okay. So those of you that do, what do you have to share or comment about what you do that you really like that these other people should do? Does yours look exactly like mine?
Pretty similar? I think there's some things we can improve on ours. One thing I've been doing is kind of letting the students be a little more in charge of it. Like, so they need their chance for some leadership, and they're assigning articles to some younger students. And that's worked fairly well, but I think it could be a bit more effective, maybe with a little more involvement from administration in some of their planning sessions.
Mm-hmm.
As an individual, to work together a little more as a team, they can kind of force students that are on it, and they kind of then say, what's your month to do it? And then you're the man, you do everything. Well, that wasn't really fine. So it just, yeah. I like the idea, but we need a little bit of work in there, and a more structure having things.
Good. And I might repeat that you're looking to... have the students more involved with your newsletter, and we're in the same boat, so maybe it's good we came here and talked to each other and said, you know, this needs to happen, because it's an idea I've had as well, that even collecting that student work I talked about or something, maybe they could go around and find it and do some editing work instead of every month, oh man, I have to get this thing out by tomorrow. So Yeah, good idea. We just need to implement, right? Okay, so now that you said it, next year I'll ask Matt how it's going. Okay, good. Anyone else?
Our school has done a newsletter some years, but the last couple of years I think it was not done just for lack of energy to get in. It does take quite a bit of time, I guess. You know, then you have ideas on how.
Delegate. Yeah, I mean, you're the one with the vision. If nobody does it, if you don't do it, probably nobody will do it, right? So you could delegate it to somebody else on the staff or get some students involved. Is that what you were asking? Any ideas for, you mean what to put in it or how to get it, how to have the time to get it done?
It's something that takes a lot of energy from the teacher and the principal.
You're asking if it takes a lot of energy?
Yeah.
One thing I'll say that helps is to have the document saved and to come into there next month. Everything's formatted. I just come in, change the dates, change the Bible memory passages, tell my teachers Reflections is coming up. I need current Bible memory passages and anything you have to add. You can write principal blurbs ahead of time and have a couple, for the school year that you insert that when you were inspired at Teachers Week, you wrote up a couple blurbs. So I do most of it myself, but I probably should delegate more. So I would suggest that to you as far as having the time to get it done. Any other ideas for him on either time or what to put in?
For a number of years now, my school's had a weekly update, news that it goes home. And the principal has been trying to write an inspirational article every time. And the one I'm taking over him this coming year, he said he was empty by the end of his time. He was getting pretty lame with his article today. He was right on that. anyhow, so I'm hoping this year to have every week have one of the teachers write an article about just general classroom, what's going on in the classroom. It's a window into the school for the parents that aren't visiting. They can see, so we're studying whatever in history, and we did this, had this event, and whatnot. And that way, we have four teachers, so that way, every month, one teacher writes an article, and then there's all this place for the principal to write, I think, the upcoming information they need to know about, or something inspirational I want to share. There'll be room for that, too.
Good. And, some people might have, some classrooms have a classroom letter they do every week, but if your teachers aren't sending anything home, that would be great for them to assign them to take a turn writing in the newspaper. I personally, if it's going to be lame or if I don't have the time, I just skip it. So I don't have a blurb in every month. If I'm just crazy stressed, I just put the basics in and send the thing out. I try to have one, but rather than putting something lame in, I'd rather just skip it. The other thing I'll say is it doesn't have to be long. It doesn't have to be a five-paragraph essay on your philosophy of education. It could just be something short, just something, we're having a great year, and yesterday I enjoyed seeing the 7th and 8th graders go out and collect insects and join themselves in God's creation. And, next week we're looking forward to this, and thank you all for being involved, or whatever. Just short blurb from the principal can mean a lot. And the parents don't have time to read your philosophy of education every month either. But some parents have told me that they enjoyed what I wrote. So I don't know how many of them actually read it. Anything else on newsletters? Okay, so if nothing else, maybe you were inspired that this is something you should consider and do and delegate somebody to do in your role as leadership. Communication slips. This is something I tried to implement at our school. I'm not sure how successful it's been, but there have been times when the teachers didn't communicate with phone calls as much as they should have, and the parents were surprised when suddenly the F came home on the test, or how'd we get to this point? I didn't know this was an ongoing issue, and suddenly it snapped. So what it looks like is we came up with four different sheets that are, what do you call them, mass-produced. They're the same, except the teacher's name is different. So there's one for your student. It basically says your student got this score on this test today, and the teacher fills in, and I encourage them to do it for both poor test grades and good test grades. So if the parent sees a slip coming home, they never know which way it's going to be. Your student got 100% on geography test today, teacher X. And just so it's mass-produced, they can just pull one out of the notebook, sign your name, scribble it in, send it home, and like Melvin said, you know, they should hear some commendation as well. And then it can also be used for, your student got a 67 on a history test today. Did he study last night? ? And then these slips require a parent signature, and they're supposed to come back in the next day to prove that the parent saw them. The parent can then add a comment to it, like, why in the world is this happening? Or thank you. Or just sign and send it back in. That can then plant a seed if the parent wants to call and say, you know, hey, why is this going on? Or whatever. It can open conversation. But it's designed to be a low-stress way for the teacher to just, you know, instead of trying to get a hold of somebody on the phone, and some people don't like that, just sending a little message home. So then there's also one for behavior. And again, that could be positive or negative. Your student was very helpful at recess today, teacher X. Your student, was climbing trees during recess today. And as a result, he spent the rest of recess inside. Teacher X sent it home. And you're just letting the parents know. The teachers are not required, you know, I don't have a format set up of this is what you must report and this is what you isn't, what you don't need to. But it's just a tool there for the teacher, and so it's an idea that you could use in your school. So behavior, test scores are the biggest ones, and we have some other slips as well. Questions or comments on that? Do you have anything similar to that?
I often, I shouldn't say often, but instead of calling a parent, I like to send them a text. It's a little easier for me because, like, I'm one of those people that kind of drains me having to call someone, even though I need to do it more. What do you think about that? Sending someone a text versus calling them? Like, you should call sometimes, I know, for sure.
Yeah, I prefer calling. I don't have a cell phone. My wife does. Sometimes they text her to get a hold of me. I don't like texting. That's just me. So it seems to be the form that people are going to. So if that's what the parents want, and a lot of schools are setting up, you know, like the like a one-call system is going by text, and parents like that. If that's what your parents like, you know, more power to you or them. What do I think of it? That's what I think of it. I don't do it. But anyone else, you text and find that helpful, useful?
I would say it depends on the nature of the communication.
Yeah.
Anything that is a little icky or potentially difficult or significant, I'll try to you can't face-to-face them at all. But if it's just general warm, fuzzy communication.
Yeah.
Probably the text. Because there's something about tone and inflection and that kind of communication. Yeah, it does take more energy. But if you just reserve that for bad situations, and then be back to kind of what Melvin was talking about, where it's a phone call. You know, so.
Texting might be good for messages, but if you're going to have a conversation, there is so much in the tone. Face-to-face is even better because there's so much that's communicated visually that's even better than phone, and texting is even worse than that. But for getting a message across, it's effective.
Yeah, I was mostly thinking of it for things like you said, you sent home on communication slips, like good grade, bad grade, that's it.
Yeah, I think that could work. If that's all you're doing, because that's not much different than a slip of paper.
Right.
Yeah. Because of some problems we had with parent-teacher communications. Our school board implemented behavior books, which wouldn't strictly need to be for behavior, but it's a slot in there for teachers. They're supposed to go home every day, get signed every day. They're a little tedious for the teacher, but they are a great way to say, hey, even if there's hot lunch tomorrow, I mean, anything, they're supposed to get a signature and be sent back. And they work for positive, negative, pretty much any comment on the day. Sometimes you just mark the okay box and send them home because you're in a hurry. But they seem to work okay. Some people think they're not necessary, but they are an opportunity to communicate without the other ways. Tedious phone texting is even kind of tedious, especially. Mm-hmm. But if you take a bad report out, you can always walk out and talk to the parent as well. At least one that takes them out. It depends on the school and the communication, how well you know your parents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, communication books are great if everybody's on board, and it can work efficiently if it's a habit. But then if you have a couple that... So, good. Anyone else?
This past year, for the first time, I started sending home every week for every student in my class communications. Here, what I call it. But anyhow, it was in four categories: a thumbs up, thumbs sideways, a thumbs down, for behavior, for whatever. So, quick visual, and then a place for comments. I keep the document on my computer. Most of them already have thumbs up for everything because there's nothing to say. I hit print every week, and it's easy to send home. But what I like about it is that it gives the opportunity for every week. If there's a subtle problem building up, it's not like I call up the parent and scare them with this alarming news. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to parent-teacher interview time, every 9 weeks or so, they already know what's going on and they've got a feel for what's happening. Mm-hmm. I highly recommend it. My question is, I was just talking to one of my co-teachers last night, and he was asking, should he be doing that too? It's his first year, and I didn't know what to tell him. I'm like, it's amazing, it works well, but you're already going to be overwhelmed with everything he's going to be overwhelmed with everything his first year. And I don't know how much to try to encourage him to do this communications thing. It's extra work.
Yeah. Thinking of the slips or communication books, I probably wouldn't require it if he's not behind it. If he's excited about it and he has the energy to do this, it could be a good idea. Yes.
Once a month would be more manageable than once a week.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely.
Sure. One thing I've been learning with my class, and this is with homework, with behavior, with all that kind of stuff, is have a daily chart where whenever they finish a subject, mark it off. The same thing for behavior and all that we're referring to. Each day, just at the end of the day, just review it a little bit, good, bad, in between. And then at the end of the week, you just add that up and total it. Instead of having to sit down and try to remember from the whole week how it went, because that can be difficult, I know. So if you have it every day, just a simple, what the one gentleman said about a visual, being able to see a little bit how it was, just make a quick note, and just tally it up quickly, that can be something too.
Good. Okay, this is good. We're talking here, and our time is going by, so I'll just pop the next two up at once. Phone calls, which we've already alluded to, and Melvin mentioned this morning. Report cards. How many of your report cards have a space for comments from the teacher? Some of you. Okay, so I don't always do it, but that's a good place to put praise in, where both the parent and the student, well, and all three, the teacher sees it. And so in this triangle, we all know we're seeing the same thing. You're not telling the student something at school and the parent something else. It's just a format. You put it right on the report card along with that A, that you really enjoyed the student's cheerfulness this last semester or whatever. And everybody sees that. It's written in stone, as it were. Any comments or questions about phone calls or report cards? Communicating.
Our report cards they're like CLE's report cards. They have all these behavioral categories, and you mark how they did this last quarter on it.
Do you find that tedious, or do you like that?
Yeah, but it's only once a quarter. So it is a little hard to remember those sometimes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I agree with what you say. It's hard to remember. So what we started doing is my assistant and I will do those together. But then we'll also make notations as we're doing, like our record keeping, or how they did with the schoolwork. So some of those things we keep ongoing records. So, you know, this many marks is this, this many marks is that. And then that way we can kind of compare apples to apples instead of saying, well, this is a good student, and then we took everything that us in those. Just a way we could be more fair with some of these subjective evaluations. I think would be helpful.
And that brings up a more general point, even anything you can do ahead of time as a principal, you will never regret later. You know, if you can halfway through the quarter do some of those entries, it might be more fair, and especially if you're doing it ongoing, and stress you out less at the end. So you'll never regret if you start doing something like that ahead of time. Anything else? Okay, visiting. Do your parents come and visit? Nope. I agree with Matt. Very little. Who has parents that come and visit at least once a year? You know, most of your parents. Okay, good. Any comments? You wish it would happen more?
If they don't show up at a parent-teacher meeting, we require them to come in. So that's a great opportunity.
Mm-hmm. You might be like me that you wish they would. You know, as a principal, you think they should. You wish they would, but you know, you secretly don't mind that they're not here watching everything. But when you're wearing your principal hat and you're thinking about parents as partners, why don't they show up? And I think if they would show up at least once, it would show their students, you know, we care about what you're doing, and we're here to check up on that because we value what you're doing here. And so it's not that none of my parents ever come and visit. One thing we try to, two ways it can happen for us that we try to encourage is all school devotions, we call it, or you might have a chapel once a week where Father comes in and we encourage him to visit. So every time when he's done, you know, I thank him for coming, and are you staying to visit? You know, well, now I gotta get back to work, you know. Or yeah, we are. Okay, well, I'll get you a schedule. You know, you're welcome to visit all the classes in any order you want. Here's a schedule. Here's, so encourage him to visit. And when I send that letter out at the beginning of the year, that's in there as well. You know, you're welcome to bring your family and visit. And hot lunches. If the mothers are coming in for hot lunch, you know, if the dads can, some of them, you know, can't because they're off laying block somewhere, and some of them are working in an office or a farm locally, and they can come in, eat lunch, and ask the blessing, and be there, and maybe visit a little bit before or after. So, and that's also an opportunity to bring some elderly in as well, some grandmas in, eat lunch with you too. But anyway, those are two ways that we try to make it happen. Any other comments?
One thing our school has started, and this isn't necessarily parents, this is a school board, but there's about 5 members on the school board, and they take turns by week to the school, so we have someone every week come in just to spend a little bit of time at the school.
Good.
School did that too, and one of them showed up all year.
Yeah. Yeah, and I asked this year as well, you know, we're having a struggle here, and you know, I need you to show up, and maybe 2 of them did. So anyway, we can commiserate, but it's good when they do show up. Now, the buck stops here, though, okay? The principal takes responsibility. So here's an inspiring story for you.
Have a good day.
Before sunrise, Principal Elizabeth McWilliams is on the move.
Hey, Darianne, how are you?
Connecting with students at Carroll Magnet Middle School in Raleigh, North Carolina. But even after the last bell rings,
how are you?
That connection continues. She's making house calls.
I'm so proud of her.
It's a practice she started back when she was teaching, startled after her first parent-teacher open house at school.
Nobody came.
It was a teaching moment.
Sometimes we mistake hardworking parents. We mistake their absence for a lack of interest. And I found that that's not the case.
So instead of asking parents to come to her, she's going to them. More than 900 families in all. Her students' progress is proof it's making a difference.
You gonna come to mommy?
At first, Mariah Whitaker doubted the principal home visit could help her daughter, Alana, who had been struggling in school.
To have Miss MacWilliams get to know us on a personal level empowers her to do better in school because she feels that much more supported.
So, and there she's showing her honor roll thing. Okay, comments, questions? Do you have 900 students or families? Okay, so, you know, we could go visit their homes. You know, if the buck stops here, that principal was from North Carolina. She took that seriously, and she went and visited the homes.
This is a little off the subject, but do you ever, as principal or teacher, be able to sit down and have peace that, oh, okay, I did all I can, and I worked as hard as I can, like, you know, it just seems like there's so much possible that you can do. Sometimes I wish I could just say, yep, I did the best I possibly could, and, you know, do you ever feel like you ever had that peace, or just, does that not happen?
the peace that I did all I could?
Yeah.
No.
You just have peace of just accept it. It doesn't.
You try to prioritize and do what you can, and sometimes you just have to go home. Nadia Lopez, the story at the beginning, started her new school. She never went home before 10 o'clock at night. She worked every single holiday and weekend, every Saturday and Sunday, and she didn't have much of a marriage at that point. She was basically there 24/7. Very successful principal, okay? So, yeah, I don't know how she did that, but she was ready to resign then, right? So, yeah, you have to find a place of, maybe it is a place of peace, but a place where you can feel that you can sustain it. And there's always more you could do, like visit every student's home, but you have to decide what's the priority for you. And sometimes you just have to go home, come back tomorrow.
I think it's a real tension that we live with. Because it's that there's more I could do, I should be doing more, and I'm not reaching around, so I'm just going to quit and let somebody else do it better. Okay. But that may not necessarily be the case. There's mm-hmm. a certain element of where I'm going to give the Lord my five loaves and my two fishes and let Him increase it. And you have to accept the fact that you can't do everything perfectly, but I also need to keep growing and improving and doing better. And so how you resolve that tension to where you're okay with yourself but not okay staying there is really grace. I think that's where I find myself.
Good, thank you. And Melvin's admonition to be a jack of all trades and a master of one, I think that applies to a principal as well, in that you will never do everything perfectly and to the fullest extent that you should, that you'll be visiting the parents and talking to them and discipling all the students and developing all your faculty and just doing this all perfectly. And so at least if you do your responsibilities and then have some areas where you really do well, that will go far. And you know, different principals have different personalities, and we know that this principal really loves this and he does well in that, and that will bleed over to other areas. But yeah. Parent-teacher meetings and conferences, we should move on, but I'll just mention in relation to the video we just saw, she said sometimes we make assumptions about parents, you know, why they're not here. And so with parent-teacher meetings and conferences, we have two evening meetings a year and then two usually afternoon or evening conferences a year. And so we try not to overdo it. If you have too many meetings set up throughout the year, I don't have to go to another meeting. So try to limit the amount of times you require the parents to come to school, make it short and sweet and good when they're there, so that they feel it was worth their time and they didn't have to wait to get into the conference like at a doctor's office for 20 minutes because this teacher was going over time and going, try to run things efficiently, make it short and sweet so they feel it's worth it. Okay, moving on to developing faculty. So here I have, we're sitting around the table, everybody brings their piece. Remember, it's all about the people. The two best ways to improve a school are get better teachers or improve the teachers you have. The best teachers in the world. A couple quotes from here. Principals make a huge difference for school performance. I never saw a great school without a strong principal. They work their magic, I believe, by building effective teaching staffs. Nothing influences student achievement more than the quality of the teachers, and nothing influences the quality of the teachers more than the quality of the principals. McKinsey and Company put it this way. They're a huge, world-renowned consulting firm. The quality of an education system cannot exceed the quality of its teachers. If teaching is to become an esteemed profession able to attract and retain the best and brightest, it will need to provide better compensation, recognition of performance, intellectual stimulation, opportunities for growth, and more. So some of that we can advocate for as principals and go to bat for our teachers. So there's, don't underestimate the importance of your teachers and your ability to influence them. Nadia Lopez wrote a book, Bridge to Brilliance, since she became so famous in the last couple of years with that blog, the story at the beginning. And I just got this out of the library and was reading in it. And just one story I want to share with you. One day when the kids were being especially defiant, yelling at the top of their lungs, setting the bathroom on fire defiant, Mrs. Doran came into my office and I could tell immediately she was just done. But there was no way I was losing her. "No, you're not leaving this school," I said. "You're going to really love what you do, and you're going to love it with these children. You just have to smile, and you have to talk to them. And I don't mean during detention. Just talk to them in the hallways and after class. Then you'll enjoy your job, and they'll enjoy you." So it's easy to say that as a principal, but I had to find practical ways. So I asked Mrs. Dorn what she liked to do in her spare time and found out that she is a beekeeper. She sells the honey from her hives, and she also sews. In fact, she said she'd made the dress she wore to her interview for Mott Hall. So I suggested she might do a sewing class with the scholars. I gave her every resource, so she bought sewing. Some sewing machines were bought, some were donated. Just as I predicted, when Miss Thorne brought her passions to Mott Hall, the kids began to love her. She began to love being here. And not only did she not lose that teacher, but that teacher's an integral part of her staff today. So never underestimate your power to look the teacher in the eye and say, you're, as Howard Bean put it one year when a young man said he was burnt out and ready to quit. And Howard Bean looked at him and said, "You're not burnt out. You didn't even get enough kindling to start a fire yet." So never underestimate your power to encourage a teacher. And remarkable transformation when the teacher connects with the students in a personal way and just talks with them. And it's your job to lead them to know how to do that. The single most effective strategy I employed in changing students' behavior and improving learning outcomes was talking to the kids. So never underestimate the power of talking to your teachers and talking to your students, having conversations with them. Great teachers make a great school. Parents know this, and students measure by this as well. No matter how many awards or plaques or high test scores, the quality of the teacher determines the perceptions of the quality of the school. So some things for developing faculty. Obviously, meetings. We have faculty meetings every other week for an hour. I try not to overdo that, just like overdoing meetings with the parents. So some of them are business. As we're in busier times of the year, we have to spend more of the faculty meeting in business. But my ideal is to spend half the meeting in business or questions, concerns. And I have a fairly small faculty. It's five of us total. Just issues we need to discuss, and then the last half, which it isn't always that much, but on some kind of faculty development, whether it's a book we're going through together. Every summer, I get this idea from Gerald. Every spring at the end of the school year, I buy each of my staff a book that I'm really excited about and then require them to read that during the summer, or at least start it And then in August, when we get back before school for in-service, we go through part of that book and maybe continue it through the year in our faculty meetings. So the faculty meeting is a time to discuss what needs to be discussed, but also to cast a vision. And studies show promoting discussion of instruction among your staff is very important. So, any comments on faculty meetings or books?
Something we started doing and really like it. Staff really likes it. We have a little meeting every morning, 5-10 minutes, and some nuts and bolts how things can work. We've got a small facility, and so we have to do quite a bit of sharing of spaces. That way, we can kind of get things organized and if anything special is happening, the other teachers know what's going on. A little more sense of community.
Good.
And then we also, I tell them to bring something to the staff, maybe either a song or a scripture or a thought or a problem or whatever. And so we just have a real quick little sharing time and then we get the day.
Everybody does that every day? Bring something? Or, okay.
If we have too much business to discuss, we may not have time for everybody to share. But like I said, it doesn't need to be anything really that profound. Just share something personal, you know, a 30-second sound bite. I feel it's done a lot to help us feel like a team instead of a bunch of fragmented individuals trying to do good things.
Good. So it functions both a business meeting and a morning business meeting and devotional period every morning. Good. We meet two mornings a week for devotions. The one I lead, the others the teachers take turns leading, and then that's a time for me to have announcements at the end as well, or like you said, things that are coming up. Any other comments? Okay, we need to keep moving. It's fun to discuss. Observations. I don't know if you do these. I try to observe each year. My ideal would be to video them and then have them watch the video, not necessarily for me to watch the video with them and evaluate them, just for them to see themselves. I found that very valuable when I was here in TAP, and so, you know, I'm a little scared about that, but it's just watching yourself. You know, maybe my wife will come in and do it, or I'll do it, just a short video clip, and watch yourself, and I don't always get that done. And I try to, during the winter, we have shop and home ec where the older students are out, and so I have a couple days, we do it a couple days back to back, a couple days every winter where I don't have classes because my students are out in local shop or the mothers are doing home ec. That gives me a little breather and chance to visit classrooms and give them some feedback. So, there's a lot of information available on that, and we need to move on. Along with that, there can be an observational visit where they know you're coming in to look. And I try to emphasize to them if I'm coming in to observe that this isn't all about you. This is also me seeing how the students are behaving and whether they're paying attention and what you can do to make sure that that's happening. It's not just all about evaluating you to decide whether I'm going to fire you or something, as, it, you know, as they might have this perception in the public school of performance review. So there's a time to do visits formally and informally. Just stop by their classroom at the end of the day and just, how's your day going? That means a lot to just, how are you, you know, how'd today go? And you'll find out, they'll tell you things that they would have never come to your room or office to tell you. But you go in and say, how did today go? And, you know, some teacher will tell me something. And I'm like, wow, you know, I should have heard about that. You know, I'm thinking, why didn't you come and tell me about that? But, hey, you know, the buck stops here. At least I came and found out about it. So that's valuable as well. So going to conferences like Teachers Week, we go to MAXA, or that morphed with ACSI now. We could discuss this more, you know, what's the way of the future, but that's important, I think, to go to something each year or before the year, something to lead your staff in. I really appreciate Matt hearing that, you know, he has some new teachers this year, so he brought them to Teacher Week. He's showing the leadership. You know, he brought them here. We got to go learn. And don't forget to say thank you. And there's various ways to do this. Literally, say thank you. You know, they should hear you thanking them. I thank you for your hard work today. As you're leaving the room, asking them how it went. Or it could be some benefits. You know, our school has, you can buy personal things up to $50 every year for professional materials. So if you want to subscribe to a magazine or buy a book at Teachers Week, the school reimburse up to $50. You can have them over for supper or organize the parents. So we have a new teacher in our community last year, and I assigned the parents, you know, as my principal hat. Hey, guess what, parents? Here's a sign-up sheet, okay? We got this new teacher in the community and from outside, and you're going to invite her over for supper sometime this year because she's from outside the community. If nobody else does that, or if you don't do that, probably nobody else will. New teacher induction is very important. Assign a mentor teacher to new teachers if you can, especially if it's a young lady that probably won't come to you every day and ask about these problems. If there's another lady in the school you can assign her to, that would be great. And then finally, discipling students. I like this graphic here of if you're mentoring or discipling someone, we're each working together on your life, okay? I'm helping you put the pieces of your life together. But this is a word the spell checker didn't recognize, discipling. Maybe it likes discipline better. Principals are known for that. Here's a quote from Kate in The Atlantic, November 2013. A few years ago, when I walked the hallways of a high school with my five-year-old niece, she remarked without prompting, "There's the principal's office. You only go in there if you're in trouble." So how can we change that perception? Thinking of discipline. Discipline with discipleship. Just a couple points here. Support the teacher as much as possible instead of replacing them. You know, have those conversations after school. This is what you're going to do tomorrow. And maybe I'll walk in and check up on you and support you. But not, you know, I'm going to walk in tomorrow and fix all your problems. Or I'm going to take him to the office and fix him and send him back to your room. Because that undermines the authority of the teacher. Try to work with them as much as possible. Work with the parents. Be a servant. What can we do? Call the parents up and say, you know, the teacher is having this problem. And what do you suggest we should do? And talk one-on-one to the student, you know, if it comes to that point. What's going on? Ask. Listen to them. Get them to suggest what to do. I had a lot of respect for my first-year teacher last year. She was really thinking on her feet when this little boy was acting up, and she did not know what to do as a first-year teacher. She's talking to him in the hall, and she says, "Well, what would you do if you were the teacher? What punishment, you know?" Well, I would, you know, he's this little third or fourth grade boy, I forget. Yeah, I would make me stay in at recess and then do this and then do that. And he, okay, that's great. So sometimes students have good suggestions on what should happen to them. Get them to suggest, you know, why is this going on? Get to the root of the issue. Back to Nadia Lopez, because I was reading her story recently. She had so much success with, she knew that all this acting out is due to other issues. You know, one of the students saw his father gunned down in the streets. Yeah, he's acting out at school. And so what looks like the immediate issue, it might be related to some recruit issue. So mentoring, one-on-one meetings, providing student leadership, like student council, student groups, having students have devotions. As a principal, it's, you know, your job to organize something in your school about student leadership, whether it's them working on the newspaper or we have student groups assigned, and throughout the year, and student leaders in each student group, throughout the year we can divide the student body up into small groups, whether it's for chapel or field trips or whatever. And give the students responsibility. So they have weekly cleaning jobs at our school as well as a yearly responsibility. At the beginning of the year, they sign up for something, whether it's, and this is the older students in my room, whether it's keeping the clocks on time, whether it's keeping the supplies in the restroom, whether it's this or that, some other responsibility they have. This is our school, and I tell them, look, if you don't do this, I have to do all this, okay? And I have plenty of other things to do, so I need you to help me run this school. Give them some responsibility. Some of our older students give flashcards to younger students, or they serve on committees like yearbook or newsletter could be a committee. And then finally, as a principal, it might be your job to help them explore careers. So we do career days every spring for 11 and 12 where they go out and shadow somebody. We're out of time, but we could discuss, you know, career exploration. I try to give the seniors a survey, like a personality and career exploration survey. I just found something online to help them explore where you're going to go from here. As a principal, that's something you can cast a vision for. So we could talk more, but I got through my slides and we're out of time. You are dismissed.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.